Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Maggie. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Great. You know, I'm in my favorite office in the world up here in Michigan, and I'm looking out, and actually I'm not making this up, see two bald eagles sitting on the beach picking at something. A bit of an alewife die-off over the past couple of days, so there are these little tiny three-inch fish.
Wow.
That have floated up there. It's about one every 6 inches along the beach, and you know they'll float away in a couple of days, but for now the bald eagles are having a feast. More of a sort of a small plates, maybe kind of an appetizer for them, but it's kind of cool seeing them hunched over there working on the fish.
Yeah, that's cool. We have to begin to worry about obesity and the bald eagle population.
It's going to be a good couple of days for them.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you've picked an article this week that is from the New England Journal of Medicine, and it looks at pacemaker defibrillator surgery without interruption of anticoagulation. I'll give the page numbers in a moment, but for a while we've known that the continuation of anticoagulation increases the risk of bleeding following all kinds of invasive procedures. But we also have known that if you interrupt this therapy, you might increase the risk of thromboembolism in patients taking anticoagulants to prevent these kinds of thromboses. There's also a requirement of several days for the anticoagulant effect to resolve after warfarin therapy is discontinued. Rebound hypercoagulability can occur following the abrupt stopping of anticoagulation, and it takes several days after warfarin is resumed to establish that sort of therapeutic level. So the importance of these issues is not to be underestimated. It varies in terms of the recommendations based on the indication for why the person is taking the anticoagulation. But at present, there's no general recommendation that can be applied to all patients undergoing elective surgery or elective procedures who are taking long-term anticoagulation, which brings us to the New England Journal of Medicine article published in 2013, volume 368. And it begins on page 2084. The article is intended to address the clinical question. For patients who are currently taking warfarin and undergoing the insertion of a pacemaker or a defibrillator, should warfarin be continued or should they be bridged with heparin? Mark, this is a randomized controlled trial. What did they do and what did they find?
Yeah, this was actually the first really good big study to try and answer this question. There was a systematic review last year that we had covered in Poems that addressed this question, and they found a bunch of observational studies where doctors were allowed to decide whether someone was bridged or not, and obviously that could have a big selection bias, and that study concluded, boy, there's really no evidence that bridging is any good, and it looks like it's a lot worse. And they found one little teeny randomized trial. So this is great to see this study come out. And they took 680 patients. All of them had at least a 5% risk of thromboembolism. And they were all taking warfarin, and most were had atrial fibrillation or flutter as the indication for the anticoagulant. They were about 70 years old. And like you said, they were all getting a pacer or defibrillator inserted. And they just got randomized to either usual management with warfarin, so just keep taking the warfarin, or to get bridging heparin. So the bridging means that they stopped the warfarin about 5 days before the procedure. Then they got full-dose heparin, either low molecular weight or the old-fashioned kind. And that was continued till just before the procedure. That was stopped. And then they started heparin and warfarin 24 hours after the procedure. And then they stopped the heparin once they were therapeutic again. So the patients weren't masked, so they knew what they were getting. The surgeons knew who was anticoagulated or not. But the people who later on were assessing whether or not there was a hematoma in the device pocket, you know, where they put the device, were blinded to the initial assignment. The groups were similar. They did everything else well. The primary outcome was, again, getting one of these hematomas or whether they had a longer hospitalization or interruption of anticoagulation. Any of those was considered a bad outcome. And they actually stopped the study prematurely because that outcome occurred in 3.5% in the continued warfarin group and 16% in the bridging group.
Hmm.
So much worse outcome. Number needed a harm of 8 for the bridging group. Two patients who had the continued warfarin group did have embolic events. Both ended up, when they checked, had an INR between 1 and 1.2, so it was a problem with, they weren't therapeutic at the time. It wasn't a bleeding complication. So this is the best, largest trial that, you know, looked at this question. And this brings up, you know, the larger question of what do you do with patients having any kind of surgical procedure who are on warfarin. And I don't want to go too far, but it suggests that we really need to rethink this whole idea of bridging therapy. The authors speculate that one of the benefits may have been that they had fewer hematomas because they called it kind of an anticoagulant stress test. So if these people were still on warfarin during the surgery, if there was a bleeding vessel, the surgeon was more likely to see it and address it at the time of surgery, therefore less risk of a hematoma down the road, which I thought was kind of interesting, rather than waiting until they got re-regulated, and then if there was a little bleeder, it really cut loose and developed the hematoma.
Interesting. I guess who knows if that's the explanation, but it's pretty impressive. Those are pretty big differences between the two groups. And to be honest, it's exactly the opposite of what I would have predicted.
I think it's true for most people, yeah.
Just to go back, Mark, for one quick moment, in your introduction, you talked a little bit about these 680 patients with at least a 5% annual risk of thromboembolism. I'm wondering, and I bet some other listeners are also wondering, how do you calculate at least a 5% annual risk? Is there a calculator, or how did they come up with such a precise number?
Yeah, there are a number of calculators that are used. There's a CHADS score. And it's there's several iterations, CHADS 2, CHADS VASC, and they look at things like whether you have diabetes, heart failure, age, comorbid cardiovascular disease, several of those outcomes. You just Google CHADS and atrial fibrillation, you'll find that calculator online.
Thanks, Mark. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.